The body stores things until you're ready to work with it, and it stores it in the body.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today's guest is a badass for sure. She opens the interview and I ask her what she wanted to do and her vision for her life. And she said, listen, I started out wanting to change the world. These are the kind of women I resonate with very, very quickly. Annette Dubois was my guest today. And what she talks about and what we go into is a concept called focusing. And focusing is a tool to enable us to understand and interpret the feelings we have in our body as they relate to our current mindset or psychology. It's a fascinating conversation and such an interesting tool that enable all of us to gather more information, increased information, to make decisions with respect to our lives. I think it is the perfect complement for an entrepreneur when they're looking for insight about the types of decisions that they need to make in their lives. Annette started her career as an environmentalist and very quickly learned that it wasn't necessarily the ideas, but the systems, the businesses, the organizations, the stakeholders in the environmental movement that required a new framework and way of thinking in order to be effective in a rapidly changing world. These pressures and these understandings caused her to change her career. And that is how she discovered focusing was one of the tools that she learned about as she was progressing throughout the course of her life. Annette is a consummate professional. She is always interested. She is interesting, and she was a fascinating guest to have on today's podcast. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Annette Dubreuil. Annette Dubreuil, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much, Megan, for having me.
I'm super excited to have you. And we've been having this ongoing conversation for a few years now related to this concept of focusing. And I know this is something that very few of our listeners are going to know anything about. So before we tell them what focusing is, take us through a little bit of your journey that got you to this place and the transitions that have happened for you that have you exploring this concept.
So I started out with wanting to save the planet as an environmentalist. And I went to school and I did environmental science and I realized, well, we know we're doing a lot of bad stuff. And then I was like, oh, it's the organizations that need to change. And then I went and did an MBA and I found out, oh, there's all these tools and, you know, we can change the organizations, but people aren't using the tools. And so I actually found focusing as a sidebar. I was doing some therapy and my focusing teacher, Jan Winhall, introduced me to focusing. And it took me a few years to realize why I was so drawn to focusing. But it all came together in the fall where I realized when we're in the body, which is something that focusing teaches us to do, we are connected to the earth. We are connected to people and ourselves in a much more deeply authentic way. And that makes us better people. It makes us more aware of the planet and stuff. And we can be more create a sustainable future that way. So it kind of came full circle in a funny way.
Okay, so tell us what the heck focusing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so focusing is an embodied practice. It's a practice where we really learn to listen to ourselves, and we do that with the help of a partner, ideally. So we It's something that Gene Genlund, who was a philosopher, came up with. And he realized that it was a practice that people naturally know how to do sometimes, and that for those who don't know how to do it, they can be taught. And it's about slowing down. So the first part about focusing is similar to other practices like mindfulness, where you use the breath or a body scan to get really grounded in the body, feeling, you know, your feet on the floor, or feeling sensations in the body. But whereas with mindfulness, then you would start focusing on the breath only, or a mantra, or a body scan. With focusing, we ask the body, what wants my attention right now? And then we stay with that. So it's kind of like your own treasure map. Your body is telling you what's next. And as you follow through those pieces of unpacking what's coming up, we get to become more ourselves. So there's six steps in total. And I take us through the rest of them now?
Yeah, go through it.
Okay. So step two is that asking is what wants my attention. So maybe I have a knot in my throat and I describe that. So it's not just the physical feeling of the knot, but what emotions are in there. Maybe there's anger. There's thoughts in there. So maybe I know it's about something I wanted to say or didn't say, or something that that's connected in there about speaking is often connected to the throat. And then finally, there can be memories that this feeling in the body is familiar to me of something that's happened in my past. And when we unpack all that, it just becomes a lot clearer. And then we can feel like we have clarity about what this thing is. And the next step three, is about getting a handle. So that's the word which is just like a summary of this thing. And that provides even more clarity. We're getting more and more aware of what this thing that we're working with in the body is all about. And then step four is resonating. And that's going back and forth with the word and the feeling in the body to make sure it's just right. And sometimes you get the word right away and you're like, oh yeah, that's it. And then sometimes you're a bit torn. You're like, well, it's a bit this and it's a bit that. And you need to kind of get even more focused, if you will. You're putting it literally in focus, right? Like as if you were turning a camera lens. And so when we get just the right focus, then we have that feeling of, yes, that's right. So then we know what this thing is about, and then we can dialogue with it. And so step five is all about asking questions. So we're literally in a dialogue with our body of, well, what does this need? Or why is this here? Or what would be a right next step for me? And when you're doing that dialogue, that the wisdom of the body can then come up. And then finally, step six is receiving and just being grateful for the experience.
So interesting. Okay, so like a very practical level, how long do these steps take?
So a typical session can be done in 10 minutes or it could be as long as 40 minutes. And the fascinating thing is that the body will give you an issue to work on depending on how much time you have. So if my focusing partner and I each, we have an hour time total, maybe we say we'll do 20 minutes each. And so as the partner guides you through those steps, the issue that comes up is appropriate for the time you have.
And when you say unpack things as one of the stages, what does that mean? Because I know some people are like, I've been working with my therapist for 10 years to unpack my past. So I think we sometimes have, it's a trigger word for some people when it comes to working through things. What does it mean in this context?
Mm-hmm. So I guess the one thing to say that's different about focusing than a lot of therapies, although focusing can be oriented integrated with therapy, is that when we're unpacking a problem, we're not just speaking from our head. We're really sinking in and feeling the physical sensations in the body and the emotions in the body. And so we're working with it fresh in the moment. So we are not just repeating the same old thing, but really getting clear on where we are at and what we can call our edges. So each time you go back to something from your past, it's not exactly the same as before, because your experiences, your life experience are changing the way you can maybe have a perspective of that event. And also sometimes we, as we get to know ourselves better, we can listen to all the perspectives that are part of us. So for example, you might have, usually the critic is really loud in our head. We all have this voice that sometimes is a bit negative often, and, you know, says, why didn't you do it that way? And you could have done it better, or whatever it's saying. If that voice is really loud, then we don't hear other perspectives that are also part of us. So what focusing does is it provides a way to get much more intimate with ourselves and to get those different perspectives in play. And so that is what makes it a little bit, it makes it different than just talk therapy.
And so how do we, this idea of getting into your body as opposed to your head, like how do you, like you're saying this could take 10 minutes, but I suspect it could take 10 minutes when you've been working on focusing for a period of time. But like as a focusing newbie, as someone who's like, okay, mm-hmm. I really actually want to start to get into my body and recognize this. Like I could even see for myself very easily being like, I feel this in my body and now I'm cognitively going to explain to you why it's there. Right. How do we break that like very traditional ingrained pattern of explaining what's happening in our bodies as opposed to like feeling and like visceralizing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it definitely takes longer when you're starting out because it's like anything else. When you have more expertise, you see more distinctions. If you're learning about colors, you might see red and orange, but as you learn more, you might see different shades. But the other thing about focusing is, because like I mentioned, there's a partner, so the partner can help you, and they will notice when you start to. It sounds like that's coming from your head, not your body, and. What does that feel like in your body? And you're kind of prompted back to be more aware of the physical sensations. And we use lots of words or questions to describe those physical sensations. So does it have a color? Does it have a shape? Does it have a texture, a density? Is it moving? Where is it now? So maybe I started with that knot in my throat, but maybe as we talked through it and we put into words what we were experiencing, maybe now that has been heard and something else is now active.
I mean, I am really fascinated with this. And what I'm bringing to the table is one, my own preconceived ideas around what focusing is, because I did have some before we had this conversation today, but also my experience as a clinician where I'll sit with people and I'll be aware of things going on in their life and I'm aware of things happening in their body. I'm like, the body is just somatizing what is happening in your life. And I think that concept for a lot of people is really foreign. Are there common ways that the body, quote unquote, speak to us? And then and then we're just so used to hiding that under the rug or not listening to it that we're not even aware that this communication has been attempted?
Yeah, I think that's totally always happening. The ones that are common that we recognize is maybe if we're really angry, we might notice that our hands are in a fist. Or if we're feeling a bit insecure, we might notice that our body is bending over a little bit, like we're protecting ourselves. People will put their hand on their neck. So there's like body movements, but there's also the common one is anxiety. If you ask somebody who's feeling anxious, where do you feel it in your body? They'll often know that it's in their stomach. Mm-hmm. Or if we're feeling really joyful and really happy about something, you might notice that you have a sensation in your heart center. So those really big ones are kind of common knowledge.
Right.
But not everybody will feel everything the same way. And you'll feel it in a much more delicate way. So, and it's really just being quiet and pausing. And I think that's the important part is that, so there's two bits here. So there's the first piece about really being present in the body. And so by that, I mean being present in the moment. So you're not trying to multitask. You're just really paying attention to yourself. And then you're sensing. So you're feeling in the body. So that allows you to just know what's there right now. But then, and then just pausing, just waiting to see what's going to come next. And so we're always in that moment of what's next and then putting that into words, because with your partner, you're saying it out loud. And that's allowing really stuff to come from your subconscious into the conscious. You're putting into words things that you don't even know are there yet until you get them into words. So they're, you know, you're not just saying your old story. You're telling yourself, you're describing your story as it's being created, as it's happening in your body.
Okay, so based on your experience with focusing, how does, I'm going to say naturopathic medicine as opposed to traditional medicine, but like, how does the balance between having a focusing practice and then having access to remedies or food or strategic movement or any of those pieces, how do they work together? Because part of how I view them working together, which may be different than your experience, this is why I want your comments, is that I think sometimes being able to provide a biochemical platform through remedies and different things creates an environment where your focusing work then, I'm going to say, for lack of a better term, releases with greater ease. But conversely, I would suspect that having access to those tools and understanding what's going on in your body enables you to leverage access to remedies and strategic interventions in a different way. Like, can you just comment? Maybe I'm just like lost in my own head, but can you comment on your experience of how the two really work together towards resolution?
Yeah, I think when I really stop and pause and check in with myself, it helps me know whether I want to do an activity or not, whether I want to eat a certain kind of food or not. And it really, as I've deepened my focusing practice, I find I allow myself to go slower, to take more time, to rest more. And it I'm less motivated by that part of me that was more perfectionistic and a bit more type A, like go, go, go. I feel more balanced with the work of focusing. Just seeing that what's really important to me isn't necessarily those outward facing results, but what I want in that moment. So whereas before I would have had a more regimented thing, like saying, oh, I must go to yoga once a week or something like that. Now it's like, oh, what do I want to do today? Do I want to go sprint? Do I want to go for a walk? Do I want to bike and grab some groceries? Like, I'm much more flexible in how I live my life based on checking in and seeing what I want in the moment.
So what does it actually mean to be in your body?
Yeah.
Versus in your head? Like, how do you know you're there?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to stop and scan. It's kind of like you're bringing your awareness away from your thoughts and you're just being more of an observer. So I can observe my hands. I can observe the outside of my body and I can also observe what I'm feeling inside my body. So if I stop and pause right now, I can feel the energy in my hands, for example. So then I know I'm observing, I'm not thinking, do I have energy in my hands? I'm feeling energy in my hands. Feeling sensations in the stomach and the chest area, which is often where they come up, you do need to have that first step of getting ready to focus. So you do need to sometimes clear the head, if you will. And actually one of the ways to get ready to focus is to literally visualize and think through all those issues that are in your head. You know, everybody has like 5 or 6 issues that they're kind of distracted by at any one time. So literally thinking about them and either picturing them like as books that you pile up beside you or stacking them in a basket that you put on a shelf. Some people will put them on a boat and put them out in the water, like literally clearing space by thinking and taking them out of your head and then going, okay, other than that, is there anything else that's coming in the way of me feeling okay right now? And you keep going until you feel like, okay, I'm not in my head anymore because I've taken everything out of my head that's been flying around in there. And then I'm able to sink more into the body and say, okay, so what else is there?
And is this work with focusing an extension of the type of work that Louise Hay did in terms of saying, you know, if you've got sensations and pains in these parts of their body, it's often indicative of X, Y, and Z, or the work of Gabor Mate, who really talks about a capacity for our cells to hang on to experiences and have very distinct biochemical manifestations. Are we talking about a continuum of the same idea, or is this different?
I think it probably is related, although nothing I've read of Zhenlin's work connects to it that way. He, as a philosopher, he has a whole philosophy of life and how he would actually say the body and the environment are one. We're much more integrated than we realize. And his saying is interaction first. So he'll talk about how the way we show up depends on the relationship that we're in. And we probably know that, right? When we see an old friend, we kind of activate the parts of us that are that age and we're very different than with our colleagues. So Gabor Mate's work shows that certain personality types are more likely to have certain diseases. And Louise Hay's work also shows that, that there are patterns that if you're having something in the body, it can be connected to something emotional. So, for example, I had an issue with my lips a few months ago, and lips are connected to a conflict between the heart and the head. And I was going through a number of things that were conflicting for me in my relationships and my work. Actually, I was working through some things. I've had a number of times where I have a physical ailment that manifests, and when I look at their work, there's an alignment with the spiritual meaning, and I think that is just they're all guideposts to help you access what might be happening for you in your body, because you are everybody is unique, right? Nothing is exact.
Do you think things happen in our awareness and then move into the body and then we have the chance to go back to them? Or do you think things just sometimes happen in the body and then it creates a result, or it creates a psychology, or it creates an anxiety? Do you think there's a chicken or egg here, or do you think it can work back and forth two ways?
I think it does. Things pile up, I would say, in the body. So in focusing, we have the concept of fresh frozen. So if you're not able to process something, it stays in the body, and it will, over time, it will grow. And once you work through it, then you can have it be processed. So sometimes things come up in the body and they've been there for a while, right? They're old issues, but the piling up eventually hits a tipping point where it can't handle it anymore. So it's kind of like the body's saying, okay, you weren't listening to me before, so I'm getting louder. And I think that's what happens a lot to people, that they live their life a certain way, and eventually there's a part of them that just doesn't want to continue that way anymore. So then something escalates, and then they're drawn to something like focusing to dig into it and wanting to be more embodied, and less worried about what people think and living according to societal expectations or perceived expectations even.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It feels like a tool that would be very helpful in facilitating and driving a new standard of alignment for yourself. Mm-hmm. And in my experience with people who are using focusing, it's a very quick way of understanding somatically, like literally in your cells, whether or not your actions are really aligned to who you are and what you value. Like, it's a really great checking in point around those pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really helps us connect to what you could call your higher self. So we've all had experiences along the way that have, needed us to protect ourselves in some way. And those parts they're there because we need them. But at some point, sometimes they're in the way of us doing something else. You know, we want to move on and start something else or be a different way. And it's those parts that are getting in the way. And when we really pause and are with those parts and we are non-judgmental to them and we really listen to them which is what we do in focusing, right? We're really just being curious with whatever's there. Then once it's heard, we can have access to that higher self that's underneath it, because the higher self can, once it's more present, it's kind of like that part knows that you've got an adult in the room, if you will. And, it can step back from being so protective and can relax and allow our more creative and confident self to come forward, yeah, which is really cool.
It feels like an internal capacity for accountability.
Yeah, you've got some self-leadership, and we need somebody to be in control. And if we've let our protective parts be in control, then we're not being our full selves, because we're kind of walking on eggshells with ourselves.
Who does really well with focusing? Not everyone is going to, some people are going to be like, no, not my thing. Other people are going to have different baggage that comes into it. Other people are going to be like, whoa, like, I totally hear you. Like, my body has this capacity to give me insight and answers in terms of where I could have greater wisdom with respect to my life. Like, who do you see doing really well with this as a tool?
Yeah, people who do well are people who are ready to be in their body. So there's, you know, and so often those are people who also have a mindfulness practice or a yoga practice. But sometimes there's people who, you know, they're using mindfulness to escape the body, to transcend the body. So then they don't like focusing. And focusing is a great way to do kind of inner child work or work with the past. So if people are wanting to do stuff like that, that's very helpful. Or who are really just wanting to be aligned with their higher selves. They're wanting to be more in touch with themselves so that they do well. And that you get people from all walks of life doing focusing, all kinds of professions. You know, there's people who come to focusing who are lawyers. There's people who are just parents and dealing with, you know, stuff that's happening. It varies quite a bit.
And I know we've talked about this in different ways, but is it a tool about resolving a physical issue, or is it a tool that enables issues, for lack of a better word, to draw your attention to a mindset or psychology?
I think it does help with physical issues, but most of the time people are using it to work on something emotional, but you're accessing it through the body. So it's like the body stores things until you're ready to work with it, and it stores it in the body. And so when you stop and you pause, it'll show you what's next to work on, and it's in the body.
Okay, so I don't know where my question is in this, but I'm going to comment on this idea that I read about. We're doing a book club right now called Love Warrior by Glennon Doyle. And she, have you read it?
No.
So she's just an incredible author, but she talks about in this book at one point when she's describing her relationship with her husband and how she was trying to reconcile how they respectively manage stress. And she observed that she feels like women are aware of their bodies, and when they're stressed, they retreat to their mind. Whereas men will hang out in their heads, but when they're stressed, they retreat to their physical bodies. And in that context, she was talking about a frequent mismatch of libido or sexualization in a relationship at a very busy phase of life. But I thought it was such an interesting commentary, because I was like, oh yeah, that kind of, like, I feel like when I talk to so many women, that's what it feels like. I get super stressed, I retreat to my head, and everything becomes cognitive. And then there's this collective observation, I'm totally generalizing, that men have this capacity to go and retreat to their body. And in saying that and looking at your work with focusing, do you have commentary on that? Like, do you find like men actually, once they get it, they're like, oh yeah, I can quickly tap into my body? Or like, how do men and women experience focusing differently? Let's turn it into a question.
Yeah. So the courses I've been taking recently are just with women. So I don't know if I've noticed a big difference between how men and women focus. I think it's quite similar, and I don't know that they learn slower or faster. Yeah, you kind of got me stumped there.
Okay, so this is my theory. You get to go and like take it out into the focusing world and start to see. I I feel like there's probably, and it's like osmosis. Like I think women in general, in my practice, I've observed, they can communicate what's happening in their body with a broader sense of language and understanding. Mm-hmm. But when it gets really bad, they do have this rapid capacity to retreat to their head. And I find with men, it takes them an awful long time to really recognize what's happening in their body. There's a much higher threshold of, like, we've got to be in a lot of discomfort before they're like, oh gosh, maybe I should look into this. And I just find the pattern works conversely. So I'm just curious. I'm going to leave you with it. We can circle back to it. To see, one, if women and men get different results, or if they come at the problem in a different way over the long term. But I really did find her commentary tremendously insightful. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, that's so, like, it's so interesting, and it spoke this truth.
Yeah, it does make me think of the women are from Venus and men are from Mars. Am I getting that right? Mm-hmm. Where men retreat and women need to talk about stuff, but they're in their head, right? They're just, and they're not wanting to problem solve, but they're just, they're up there.
Yeah. It is fascinating. I think we do process things a little bit differently, but I think men can slip into their bodies in sometimes easier than women can in periods of stress. But that's, you know, listen, I am not the focusing authority in any way, shape or form.
Well, and I mean, when we're focusers, usually what happens is when we do feel really stressed, and you have these relationships, you'll ask somebody to focus. So I guess maybe once you've got the skill, maybe we're less likely to just go stay in our head. We're just like, oh, if I'm just in my head, I'm kind of spinning my wheels and I don't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I realize that if I have a focusing session and I go down, because I'm working through it in a way that's really felt, usually there's some resolution and some, what Jean would call carrying forward. It does, because there's that next step becomes evident that you don't have to be in your head anymore, because you've made a decision. Your body has helped you say, okay, yeah, this is what's next.
Well, it's just more information from a different source.
It's a different source, but it's also sometimes when we're stuck in our head, it's because we're getting lost by all the different perspectives and all the different thoughts that are out there. And when we really sink in and listen to what ours is, then it becomes a lot clearer.
So amazing. So you we started this interview and you said when you started your career, you wanted to change the world. And what I know about you, that probably hasn't changed all that much. How is focusing going to leverage and amplify that original mission for you?
I'm really curious about bringing focusing into business. The mindfulness is now starting to become quite popular in business. It's interesting. Google did a project with their teams a few years ago. They wanted to know why some teams did better, were more productive than other teams. And you know, Google's like, oh, we're the king of patterns. We do search engines. We'll be able to figure it out. And they couldn't figure it out at first. It didn't matter how long people had known each other, the makeup of the teams, whether people, the experience that they had, or whether they socialized outside of work, none of that mattered to the performance of the teams. And they came across Amy Edmondson's work on psychological safety. And what psychological safety is being comfortable, feeling safe to say, like, guys, I don't understand what we're trying to achieve, or I think we're making a mistake, or I have a really crazy idea, and feeling safe to share that. So a group that has psychological safety will be able to do those kinds of things. And what Google found was that with their sales teams, the teams that had psychological safety outperformed their targets 17%, and the teams that didn't have it underperformed 19%. So I think there's a really interesting thing about, not only do we need to learn things like focusing to be connected to ourselves and be more ourselves individually, but there's a huge opportunity to have better conversations and be more safe in groups. And it's funny, I was watching an advertisement for a focusing conference that's going to be happening in New York in a few weeks. And they were talking about how often people who focus you know, they focus with people in the focusing community, and we don't have that kind of intimacy with people who in our lives are our most, our loved ones and stuff, that we, it's really hard to have safe conversations. And there's great work being done by Harville Hendricks and people like that on how to have safe conversations at home. And I think there's a lot of work that needs to be happening on how to have safer conversations at work. So I'm really excited about that. And there's all kinds of other work happening with the MIT's Theory U and Otto Scharmer. And there's exercises that can be done as a group too, that, which are very similar to focusing, that use people, the social body, so the connection between people, to we can pause as a group as well, not just as individuals. So it's fascinating. It's exciting to see how our relationships in business will be able to change as we use these different kinds of tools that are more embodied and that allow for pause and make it safe to pause, to say, I'm not sure. Let me think about that, or let me feel how that's happening in my body.
Amazing. I love it. Annette, what do you want your legacy to be?
That we be embodied, that we live our lives not just in our heads, but in our bodies, and therefore connected to the earth.
Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. What a perfect place to transition to the second part of the interview. And by the second part, I mean the last component of the interview. And this is what I call our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So these are questions that I want a really quick response to, but they're an indication of some of the ways that you live your life on a daily basis. And I think it's the things that we do every single day that define who we are and how we're able to do it. So if you'll indulge me, here's our first question. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
Yeah, it's breakfast. I always make myself breakfast. Sometimes I add in some meditation or some journaling. Sometimes even some yoga or sprinting in the summer, but breakfast is definitely the main thing.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Nonfiction. I am reading Gene Genlin's A Process Model, which is his main work. Oh, and it's a work of philosophy. It's very difficult.
Sounds like the perfect spring read. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Probably sleep. I really try to get 8 hours of sleep every night.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I think I did a 10-day silent meditation retreat. So as much as I love focusing, that was probably more intense than anything else I've ever done.
That is intense. What do you do for fun or play?
I love to rock climb.
Great stuff. And last question for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think a bit of both. I feel like my family, my grandparents and his brother, my grandfather and his brothers had a sawmill. So I feel like there's been other people in my family who have done stuff like this. So I feel like it was in my blood, but it's there's also the hurdles to get over to feel confident to do it. So I feel it's both.
Annette, you have a workshop coming up in the next few weeks that I'd love for you to tell people about. And then where can they follow up to learn more about the things that you're doing? And we'll reference all of this in our show notes.
Yeah. So there is a focusing retreat happening in Niagara Falls from June 15th to 17th. At the Mount Carmel Spiritual Center. And it has, so it's a Friday night to a Sunday, and it's got a beginner track. So if you're new to focusing, it's certainly a way to check it out. And all of our information is at focusingonboarden.com. And you can see the women's course that I teach with Nicole Mitchell. And there's other courses taught by Jan Winhall and the others in the Focusing on Boarding community.
Amazing. Annette Dubreuil, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the Anthropology Podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much, Megan. It was so much fun.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.